Stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen. Hey, what show is this?
I think it's 50.
Hey, we're 50.
You're definitely 50, Jeff.
No, I'm not 50. Not in age.
We're 45 in age.
So this is the big show, number 50. I always had all these plans. I don't know, do you watch Scrubs?
No.
You know, I find it to be a very cleverly written show.
Yes, that's what I've heard about it.
And there was an episode, I guess it was earlier this season, that was all musical. They
yes,
just
that's
did a
right,
musical.
They did Scrubs musical.
And
yeah.
it was unbelievable. I'm a kind of a critic of that kind of stuff, too, and I thought it was unbelievably well done. And so I toyed with the idea of doing a musical for this podcast. But I just, you know, I can't pull. It's huge. I can't really pull that off.
Right.
And I don't know if you can sing or not. Can you sing?
No, I cannot sing, unfortunately.
So it would have been just
so when
been me.
All those when all the old listeners ask you why what happened to all your great songs and your partner that used to sing along.
I never had a partner that could sing. Well, Carol could sing a little bit, but we never really did that in the four shows that we did together. Pat could not sing a lick.
Oh.
And she did do a rap with me, if you guys remember the Jeff and Pat podcast rap. But I did so many takes with her because her rhythm was just horrible. And that's really not a put down of her. Whenever you first actually get a mic in your face and try to sync up with the music, it's hard for most people. It was hard for me.
And I'm tone deaf, so it would be very hard for me.
Well, can we try it out?
No. No, but you're welcome to sing. If you want to sing your 50th anniversary podcast song.
It's our 50th show. It's our 50th show. That's all I have.
Oh.
So I at that point I reached writer's block.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you. And
congratulations to you. Oh. I know you haven't been there the whole 50, but
no,
you know.
I have not, but it's been the last several. So.
Yeah, it sure has. So that's very, very, very good. We did have some, even though we didn't ask for it, we got some nice little congratulations for mm-hmm. show 50. From mm-hmm. First of all, it was from Edward Honecker. He wrote us a nice little email. A fellow named CB, who's written the show before, appreciate the sentiment, CB. And Mo from Brazil, again.
Hey, Mo.
He has a voicemail. and I'm going to play that a little bit in the show. And that's he talks about St. Anthony's. They celebrate that in Brazil versus Valentine's Day.
Mo has a very nice voice.
Yes, he does. Are you attracted to him? Is that what you're saying?
I think we'd have a long distance problem. not geographically desirable. Sorry, Mo.
Well, do you know there's a term? I just found this out in Dallas. I'm sure all cities have this. Where in Dallas, if you live in the city like I do, and you meet somebody from the suburbs, especially the far suburbs, basically that they become undateable because they're geographically undesirable. They call it GUD or something, or GIUD or something like that. There's a term. No, I won't date you. You're GIUD. I never heard that before, but it is kind of true, you know, when you live an hour out, you do kind of become geographically undesirable, but you were telling me once in L.A., hey, that's
in
close.
LA, yeah. I think it depends where you live, and here, I think people have a much lower tolerance than if you were in L.A., for example, you know, you could be 15 miles from somebody, and it would definitely be an hour away.
So. Yeah, especially during rush hour, right?
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, our telephone line, just to remind you, is if you want to give us a call and leave a voicemail that we'll most likely play unless it's filled with profanities or criticisms of me.
Or me.
Actually, criticisms of me, I still play. So it's area code 206-888-4851. And you know, this is a free line, Gretchen, but it's a pain in the ass to maintain because we don't get that many calls. And I actually have to phone myself, and I don't never remember every couple of weeks to keep this phone number alive. Otherwise, they delete it. So I think I've changed our number probably about four or five times because I always forget to renew it. So remind me after the show. I don't think I've renewed for a while.
Uh-oh. Just, yeah, where did February go? You know, the last time we did this, it was beginning of February. And February is such a short month. You know,
I know.
I really could use three more days.
I could have used three more days. Definitely. Absolutely.
So here it is, the beginning of March.
Yeah.
And What's cooking in your world? What do you know about?
Well, I got some little things to talk about, just sort of little observations. First of all, well, I have two observations I wanted to make. I just sort of jot these things down as I go through my regular life. One is the door-holding manners, okay? I actually saw a Google YouTube video of door-holding manners, but this is my perplexion, my question, you know? Mm-hmm. I think in general, the consensus is if somebody is behind you, trailing you in the doorway, mm-hmm. there is, I've done heavy research on this, there is a sort of a conventional wisdom. Most people say it's around 10 feet, wherein you're supposed to sort of keep the door open for them. But I'll tell you, it just happened to me, and I hate this, it just happened to me a couple weeks ago where I was way farther than 10 foot, and this guy kept the door open for me. And you know what? I didn't change my pace. Okay, I know it's a little bit of being a jerk, but I didn't. It was in the morning. I didn't feel like I thought he was being rude to me by making me, you know, quicken my pace.
Well, I don't think that's what his intention
and
was.
It's not what his intention was, but it sort of felt like that a little bit. So I did not quicken my pace because slowly, one by one, I'm trying to teach the world a lesson that if you go beyond the 10-foot rule. I'm not slowing my pace.
Leave the door closed in your face. Yeah. That's what you're saying.
Right. Right. I don't mind opening the door. It's really not an issue. I've been trained.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what I couldn't find an answer for was, you know how you have some buildings where actually there's a series of doorways to go through.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first time somebody opens it, keeps the door open for you, mm-hmm. generally you say thanks. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's three more doors ahead, do you say thanks every time? Or what do you do? Or is one thanks sufficient? Then you just sort of grunt a little bit, maybe?
Yeah, or just wait till the very end and then say thanks.
That might work. But denying that first thanks almost maybe seems rude. Because
yeah, that's true.
So it's
maybe
a perplexion.
Thanks and nodding, you know?
Maybe nodding after that?
Because you're going to be right behind the person to get the second and third doors.
You are,
you have
absolutely.
To be caught up to them.
Right.
You know, so at that point, you're sort of going together. You're in it together.
Right.
When you get to the second and third doors. So are you saying that you would not hold the door if you saw somebody was beyond 10 feet from the door?
Yeah, because I wouldn't, I think they wouldn't really want to quicken up. Now, there are exceptions. Older people, people that are struggling with things, they got mm-hmm. a big baggage. Sure. So there mm-hmm. are exceptions. People holding babies that are just ready to fall. You know, you make some exceptions in life.
Boy, you're a sweet person.
I just want to be consistent. That's all. I'm not trying to be rude. I don't want to be rude. That's the whole thing. I don't want to hold the door for somebody that's a lot farther than 10 foot and have him feel the way I feel when somebody does that to me, which is like, oh, I got to hurry. I got to run. It's the morning. I don't want to run.
Right.
I just want to go at my pace. Can I please just go my pace?
Actually, somebody did that to me. It was the Sparkless Water Man, and I had to go up like 12 steps, and I was carrying a lot of stuff, and I think that's why he held it, because I was carrying stuff going up steps.
Right.
But I was pretty far away, actually, when he was holding it.
Right.
And I did feel like I was wasting his time, but, you know.
Yeah.
He chose to do it. So.
Right, right. Well, what do you think about the push? That's where you don't just hold the door open. You sort of, as you're going in, you sort of give it an extra push so it stays alive
so it stays
longer.
A little bit longer.
That's got some dangerous repercussions, though, right? Because it can come back pretty fast on the next person.
That's true.
So I always wonder about that one.
That is true.
That's kind of like the hiking etiquette, you know, when you have a lot of bushes and branches in front of you and you sort of walk through those branches, there's a slingshot effect of when you release the branches, it goes right into the person next to you, or behind you, rather. So it's very interesting to me. All right. So you want to hear my second observation?
Yes, yes. The first one was so fascinating.
Well, you know, Jeff's observations through life. Why is it, Gretchen, that whenever you're in some place where there's an elderly person, and let's say you're ordering food.
Uh-huh.
Elderly people always just turn around and look at you. Do you ever notice that? Elderly people look at you. They're like, just the weirdest things in life exhilarate them or something, and they just turn around and look at you.
Well,
have you ever experienced that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's only among the elderly.
Mm-hmm. It could be because you have a pretty distinct voice, and maybe they hear your voice.
I think they do it to everybody. It's not just me.
I don't know if anybody's turned around to look at me ordering food.
Really?
Yeah.
Old people do that all the time.
I did, however.
Not young people or not middle-aged people. It's old people. They just sort of look at you. Maybe it's me.
I think it is you. We'll have to see if anybody calls in about that. But I will say that I was in a doctor's office, and it must have been the longest walk. I mean, it was a huge office building, and I passed an elderly person with a walker, and I just kept walking, walking, walking. I get in the office, I sit down, I'm reading a magazine, and then like 5 minutes later, the elderly person with a walker comes in, and she sits down across from me, and I think she was kind of glaring at me, like, well, you know, it was bad that I passed her, but clearly, I was walking faster than she was.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I wasn't going to steal the appointment out from under her. Obviously, we had our own time, you know?
Right. But I mean, how can you possibly be expected to walk slow behind a walker?
Behind a walker,
I mean, that would just be awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And that would, again, probably make the person with the walker feel bad.
Yeah. So, well, I had an observation, too, about Dallas.
Okay.
Not that long ago.
Let's hear it.
You know, we were thinking about the contest called Dish on Dallas,
right,
where we were actually thinking about doing a 3 to 5 minute video cast of a video blog of the great things about Dallas that would get a convention to come here as opposed to going to Miami or New York.
Right.
And it was for the Tourist Bureau here
right.
in Dallas.
And just a background, Gretchen and I have been kind of looking for ideas to maybe start a video cast of some sort.
Right. So the premise here is that Dallas is a city of big ideas and big thinkers.
Really?
So, yeah, that was their premise.
And you sure it wasn't big stinkers?
No, they say thinkers. And so the assignment was to come up with 3 to 5 minutes on why Dallas is a cutting-edge, stylish city. And,
yes.
You know, we're supposed to talk about the thriving culinary scene or the leading arts district or the countless luxury accommodations.
Countless.
Or professional sports or trendy entertainment districts. But when you and I sat down to think about it, we couldn't come up with anything to video.
No, because there's nothing that special about Dallas as opposed to the
other big cities.
In the country. I mean, it's a good big city. It does have all that. And what I came up with is, I don't know if this doesn't really apply for this, but I thought for tourism, yeah, we're not going to draw national tourism, but we should be able to draw regional tourism because there's a lot of cool things here.
As opposed to what else is in the region, right?
Right.
But do you really think you're going to get an organization of professionals who have the opportunity to go to Miami or San Francisco or New York to come here over those cities? And the only thing I could think of was maybe it's more affordable to come here.
Travel distance.
Yeah, because travel distance and accommodations wouldn't be so high.
Right.
But we were really sort of struggling on what else. But there were a lot of the good things that make Dallas a good place to live, but maybe not the best place to make it. To come for conventions.
Right.
But I thought that was an interesting observation when you stop to think about it.
But what do conventioners really want? I mean, they want good food.
Well,
they want lots of sex, extramarital sex.
They want gambling, which is why Vegas is so hot. But, you know, I think one of Vegas's problems is you go to a trade show in Vegas, and how long do you really work, right?
Right.
You know, and can anybody really prove you're on the trade show floor doing your job? Or are you at the gambling tables?
Exactly.
Or at the Mustang Ranch down the road. I mean, it's kind of the backlash of Vegas, but that is one of the most popular cities, and so is New York, because there's so much to do. And I think as soon as
New York is a very special experience.
At 5 o'clock, you're out of there to go experience the city.
I would think the top three cities would be like New York and Las Vegas and New Orleans, because they're all special cities that have people want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people would go there without a convention.
Right. But that was just our observation on we were struggling to come up with 3 minutes of why you should come to Dallas as opposed to New York.
Yeah. I could just see us, you know, in front of the video saying, we have a convention center.
That's right.
Ooh.
We have a professional sports team. Hockey, basketball, football.
We got it all here.
That's right. Come on down.
Come on down to Texas, y'all. Get yourself some barbecue.
And steak. And big steaks.
Actually, we were talking about this barbecue with some of my friends. And, you know, I do have to say, we got into a discussion about Midwest barbecue, Kansas City, Chicago, and I will have to say it's better there. I mean, we have great steak down here, but I haven't found a place that I just loved. You wouldn't relate because
I'm sorry, meat eater, but
there's no place that I know in Dallas that's just to die for barbecue like there was up in the Midwest.
Hmm.
And I think that's true. So, anyways.
Another observation about Dallas.
Yeah, another observation about Dallas.
Hey, Miss Miller. We just need a stool sample.
Why do you need a stool sample if you think I'm just a nut?
Cause the answer's not in your head, my dear. It's in your butt. You see, everything comes down to poo. From the top of your head to the sole of your shoe, we can figure out what's wrong with you by looking at your poo.
Turk, do you have a hemorrhoid or is it rectal cancer? When you flush your dookie down, you flush away the answer.
It doesn't really matter.
So I've got a couple small things.
Okay.
Online dating. Okay, this is the headlines. Online dating people lie. Okay, that's not big news, right? This is coming in. This study is coming out in April in a journal called The Proceedings of Human Computer Interaction. Sounds very theoretical for online people. People online lie. But here's some. They took 40. You know, this is really the results of what I think is unbelievably crappy science. Because here's a sample size, 40 men and 40 women. That's it. And I'm sure they randomized it and everything, but they came from Match.com, Yahoo Personals, American Singles, and WebDate. 40 men and 40 women, that's the sample size. What they showed is that 53% of men lied about their height. That's more than half.
That is such a provable thing to lie about, too.
I know. But this is amazing. 39% of women lied about their height. Now, why would a woman lie about her height? I mean, I don't really...
I could see they'd lie about their weight more than they'd lie about their height.
Right. Well, we'll get into weight, and 64% of women lie about their weight, and 61% of men, so almost everybody. Now, I know from some of the groups that I've been in, they don't really have weight, but they have sort of body type.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned, you know, after when I first got into internet dating, I learned after like the first couple times I met somebody that average isn't average.
It's really bad.
Average means fat, which is really pretty funny. Actually, maybe that is average. So maybe that's appropriate, but. It's not what I would conventionally think of average. You think average is body height proportional, right? Okay, and then age. 24% of men lied about their age and 13% of women. I would have thought more women would lie about their age as well. But not. That's all the results we have there.
Oh,
I wouldn't go breathless for that study.
Out of the 80 people they talked to?
Yeah. So I got another little short blurb there. I heard this on a podcast, 60 Second Science with Scientific American.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great little podcast. They have 60 seconds per day. So researchers in Germany have come up with a brand new drug delivery system. Get this, Gretchen. They pack the drug in a very hard, concentrated form inside a specially made false tooth. Okay? There's a membrane that allows saliva in... And that saliva then dissolves it. And then there are two mini sensors with a circuit all in this little false tooth that check the flow of saliva in and medicine out. And the circuit controls the two valves, the in and out valve. If there's any problems, signals are sent out wirelessly to either a cell phone or an email. And when it runs out of batteries or when it runs out of medicine, you simply take the false tooth out and you replace. Go to the pharmacy and replace it. So it's especially appropriate for those that are aged and aren't very good at remembering to take their medication.
Or if it's something you have to take frequently, right?
Right. Mm. So it's pretty interesting.
That's very unusual. Yeah. Leave it to the Germans, you know?
I know. I thought it was intriguing.
They're the ones that were working on the spray-on condom, too.
Really? Yes. Spray-on condom?
Spray-on condom.
Oh, that's a great idea. Wow.
I didn't bring that story, but yeah, I actually did cut it out. They were definitely working. A German group of scientists are working on how to spray it on.
Huh.
Uh-huh. So.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to in life.
Well, here's something else to look forward to. Now, you haven't been married, but if you were going to get married, would you really like to hear from your bride that I am going to dress like Disney's Cinderella princess for my wedding day?
I don't think so.
So Disney is trying to figure out how to capitalize on their $3 billion Disney princess business that they've appealed to little girls in all categories all over the world. So now they're going to appeal to bigger girls in the business of wedding gowns. They are actually going to supply the gown so you can have a fairy tale wedding that will cost between $1,100 and $3,000. And they're going to be couture designer Kirsty Kelly is coming up with them. And you can be inspired by Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Belle, Jasmine, or Ariel.
So you could be, my bride could be dressed like Snow White?
Absolutely. Would you like to see some of the sketches? Now, I know our listeners can't see the sketches, but they are not going to be like in the royal blue that Cinderella wears. They're going to be in tasteful, elegant shades of off-white or ivory. There's going to be 34 different styles. They're going to come out in June. And there's no plans at the moment to offer prince costumes for grooms.
I was just going to ask, what do I get to wear? What fun things do I get?
But what's really surprising about this, and having worked at Disney for a while, I can tell you that there are people who are so into the whole Disney experience that Disney's theme parks actually cater to weddings. Have you ever been to one?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you?
I've actually been there and seen them.
Wow.
Going on at the time. But there's a popular wedding service at the theme parks where you can get married to tunes such as Someday My Prince Will Come, and you can get whisked away in Cinderella's coach. And it's just really pretty amazing. But up until this point, those brides who have done that have had to have their dress made somewhere else. But now you can get an official Disney one.
Huh.
And they're actually getting a little bit racier with Ariel and Jasmine. The designs feature dropped necklines and bare shoulders.
Yeah, baby. I got to plead ignorance. I don't even know who Ariel and Jasmine are.
Oh, okay. Well, I can
It must be a little girl thing.
Well, yeah, Jasmine is from Aladdin. She's
okay.
One of the princesses, right?
Oh, I always thought she was really hot.
And Ariel is a Little Mermaid.
Oh, I never saw that one.
You didn't see that one.
Yeah, no. Jasmine's hot, you know, for an animated figure.
The one they didn't do was Pocahontas. I guess they couldn't be inspired by her dress, but she's the other princess that they did not do. But they are.
Oh,
going...
Pocahontas would be kind of cool, a little Indian, you know.
Indian
thing.
Look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Snow White is sweet elegance, and Cinderella is classic glamour. So her gown is going to be high shine satin.
What a bummer. In these pictures, they're not really colored.
They're not colored yet because that's coming. You have to wait for the bridal show in April to actually see what
they're getting the buzz out to create some excitement.
And they're going to be made in Guangzhou, which is a province in China.
Of course.
That knows how to make wedding dresses.
Yeah.
So there you go, following up on the online dating story.
By the stepsisters.
evil stepsisters would be making those. Cinderella's gown.
Yeah.
At a dollar a day.
Wow. Well, I've got some health news, Gretchen.
Okay.
Some bad health news. You know, I'm so tired of this crap. Okay, did you see the study where vitamins A, C, and E, they figured out they don't really do anything. They don't let you live longer.
Right.
So they had a new review that actually of a lot of studies. So these scientists looked at the results of a number of studies, and they've shown that vitamins A, E, and C plus beta carotene and selenium don't do anything as supplements. Now, what they did...
And can't they be harmful? Wasn't that part of the
same
study?
I'm going to go into that a little bit, yeah. Basically, what they are saying, the scientists wouldn't go so far as to say there's no value in things like vitamin C or vitamin E. They said these are antioxidants, but they don't have really know is the whole thing. But they say that there does seem to be value in these when they are parts of food and when you eat them as food instead of in the pill form. Now, last year, Americans spent $2.3 billion on nutritional supplements and vitamins at grocery stores, drug stores, and retail outlets. So what's amazing to me is the money flow of all this. And I can't help but think, because I take multiple vitamins every day, and I think most people do, and I will probably still be the stupid butt that continues to do it because these studies come and go, and it's like, well... You know,
Should I?
It's like an insurance in a way, and that's not that expensive. But this whole industry is $2.3 billion is relying on suckers like us. And you know full well that this industry is they would die for a scientific article that proved that this stuff really worked.
Mm-hmm.
So you know they're working on it, and they're not coming up with anything. Now, here is the bad news you were saying. What they found is that They seem to have found a higher risk of death for people taking vitamins. Of course it has to work that way. There's a 4% higher risk for those taking vitamin E, a 7% for those taking beta carotene, which I believe is a form of vitamin A. And so, well, they have 16% for vitamin A. So I guess beta carotene isn't vitamin A. Sorry, excuse me, my ignorance. So if you take vitamin A, you get 16% higher increase in death. However, there are many criticisms of this, that part of the study, saying, yeah, you know, there's really no causal ability to discern the causes of death. So there's a lot of flux. And I actually, diving into it a little bit further, I kind of believe that. I'm not sure there's enough evidence to suggest that those things actually
contributed to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But boy, how about that?
Yeah, I did. The headline I saw said something about, it was sort of positioned where they'd no proof that they're doing you any good and they might in fact do you harm. That was how it was positioned.
Oh, really?
I read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just a different take on it.
So keep an eye out for that. All these multiple vitamins, you think you're spending money and you think you're doing good
healthy,
and
right.
you're just killing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that came out, let me change my page here, is garlic.
Oh.
Garlic, the magical vegetable.
Garlic is still good, right?
No.
No, now garlic's bad?
It's bad now. Well, actually, it's not bad, but they've done, Stanford University School of Medicine did a huge study, and they've totally, completely debunked the idea that garlic lowered cholesterol. So they basically tested how garlic, both in supplements and raw form, lowered LDL, or that's the bad cholesterol, mm-hmm. In volunteers with moderately high levels. The doses they gave were slightly higher than the label suggested, and about the equivalent of one clove. So I guess one clove per day. And then, so they set up random samples, and they had placebos to the other side, and that result was there was absolutely no difference in the cases. So, is one study enough? But I think that's one of the things everyone has this conventional wisdom that garlic is just great for you. And, I think the leading thing about garlic was to lower cholesterol. They're saying, nope, doesn't do that anymore. Mm. And to make things even more weird, as I heard this at breakfast today, I did do Google searches today and I couldn't find it. So this is just from somebody at breakfast. So who knows? But they suggested that the idea of egg yolks increasing your cholesterol has been debunked.
Hmm.
And that having egg white omelets and things like that really don't do much except lower the amount of protein that you could get from the egg yolks.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I didn't see anything in Google News for it, so I can't say that that's, true yet. But, watch out for it maybe.
Hmm.
But there is an interesting thing, because 20 years ago, I think the conventional wisdom was food that has cholesterol as part of that food gives you bad cholesterol. And I think right now what we're seeing is there's really no association. The body creates cholesterol from very complex processes. It doesn't necessarily mean just food that has high cholesterol gives you high cholesterol.
And your genes, too. So much depends on your family history.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So
how about that? A lot of conventional wisdoms in the food area. I don't know what to eat anymore. So, And what do you do about vitamin? Is this going to impact your supplements?
I think I take a multi one and everything's in there. So, do I go find one that doesn't have those? Or maybe
vitamin A seems to be the one that has the largest percent
problem.
Of.
Yeah, do I go look for one that doesn't have A?
Well, I don't think you have. I don't think they have them unless you buy all these vitamins individually. And who wants to do that?
All right.
So I wonder if a study like this will cause some of these manufacturers to make vitamin A lists.
Right.
Multiple vitamins.
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Hi, Jeff and Gretchen. This is Mo from Brazil calling you again. Hope you had a great Valentine's Day. Gretchen, you had said that you were traveling to Europe. Which countries were you going to visit? We want to know the details. Here in Brazil, as I said in my email, we don't celebrate Valentine's Day. We celebrate Dia dos Namorados, that is celebrated on the on June 12th. That is the patron's day, the saint patron. St. Anthony Day, that he was supposed to be the patron of people who are in love, etc. I explained some things in the email about the origin of that. Just to drop you a line, wishing you a wonderful weekend, a great holiday. Unless you're going to New Orleans, probably you're not going to have a holiday on Monday and Tuesday. It's a long holiday down here in Brazil. We're going to be celebrating Carnival. I personally am not very much into Carnival. I prefer quiet and to be closer to nature or something like that. So we are going to visit some historical and colonial towns in the state of Minas Gerais, that is in the central part of Brazil, that the towns date back from to the 17th, 18th century, and they're really well preserved, and the Mineira food, that as it is called, the food in that area, is fantastic, so we are really looking forward to that. So we hope you have a great weekend and to hear your podcast as soon as you can. Take good care of yourself, guys, of yourselves, and have a great weekend. See you around. Take care. Bye-bye.
So this came up while we were in the past 2 weeks.
Okay, while we were on vacation.
While we were on vacation, yeah, while we weren't doing anything. In 29 years, when we're 74.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know what's coming towards us? Apophis, which is the asteroid. Okay, and it's coming with its 1 in 45,000 chance of hitting the Earth.
Well, that's not much.
On April 13th, 2036.
Oh, and I'm booked that day.
I know I'm going to be wearing my T-shirt, I Survived the Asteroid. But
well, that probability will probably get updated as time goes on,
it
right?
It probably will.
As the course sort of reveals itself.
But what's interesting is that the UN is being urged to actually take some action on this, which is amazing.
What was the probability again?
1 in 45,000.
Wow.
And that's just this one that they've identified. And they think that if it would hit here, it could definitely wipe out a city, depending on where it hits, city or a whole region.
Okay.
It's 460 feet. So depending on the angle of impact also has to do with what will happen. But the favored approach to dealing with a potentially deadly space rock is to dispatch a spacecraft that would use gravity to alter the asteroid's course so it no longer threatens Earth.
Cool.
But to do that,
or blow it up like Bruce Willis did.
That's right, in that movie. But to do that, it would take 12 days of gravity tugging, and I can see people would buy tickets to get on a flight to be gravity tugging at the asteroid.
Yeah, why not?
But it's going to cost $300 million.
Wow.
To actually get
300
the asteroid
million
off
or billion?
Course. Million to
that
get the asteroid
seem that
off
much.
Course. Yeah.
That's just a small little part of our
GNP. But this is just the one that they've identified. I mean, they're coming at us all the time.
Right.
And, are we better off knowing that this one's coming on April 13th, 2036?
Wow.
It's 29 years from now.
Well,
And should we spend $300 million on that?
Well, I think we'll know more as it gets closer.
As it gets closer, yeah.
Yeah, I do think
and
we
maybe,
should be prepared. I think our scientists
I think Bruce
should
Willis better get prepared.
Bruce Willis better suit up. And
speaking of Bruce Willis, did you hear?
No.
His name came out in the...
He came out?
He came out in the tell-all book, Secrets of a Hollywood Supermadam, as being one of the Supermadam's clients.
That doesn't surprise me.
Bruce Willis... Tommy Lasorda, baseball legend Tommy Lasorda from the LA Dodgers, and actor Ben Affleck were all named in the Supermadam's book.
Here's what I don't get.
And they all deny knowing her.
Really?
Which is absolutely amazing.
See, you always hear even about NBA basketball players, they hire two or three hookers and have a night of cocaine and hookers. But here's what I'm thinking. All these people can get models whenever they want. Why would they go to a hooker? I don't really get it. Right? I mean, NBA players are known to have, for example, are known to have women, lining up for them to have sex with them. I don't get it.
I don't
Ben
know.
Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
I mean, he could walk into any bar and take the hottest girl in the bar home. I mean, he's a good-looking guy, and he's Ben Affleck.
Maybe because these people would talk, and these people whom he hires
They're professionals
not talk.
That are
they're
discreet.
They're professionals who have to be discreet because what they're doing is illegal.
So that's a fair point.
Right, and she charged $3,000 a day for companionship and sexual favors.
Wow.
At one point, she had 300 women working for her in 16 states in Europe. She was convicted in 1999 of 9 counts of money laundering, pimping, and pandering, and she was sentenced to 9 years at a maximum security prison in California. She's now out, and all the records from the court have been unsealed, and so she's using her own records where that she says are irrefutable proof that these people came to her to write this tell-all book. So
she is... Is she making? She wrote this book, and she's making money selling it.
Yeah, she wrote the book to make money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go, Bruce Willis, save us from the asteroid, and maybe,
hey, if he can save us from the asteroid, I'll grant him a night with a hooker.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're speaking about sex, you know, I have a sexual topic, so cover your ears. This one may get a little rough, actually. So I did a survey. You'll laugh at me, Gretchen. Look at this.
Did you graph it, Jeff?
This?
Yes,
this,
he graphed it. Oh, my God, he did graph it.
No,
he's famous for graphs.
There's no graph. It's a list of all, not all, but all the subjects of the subject line from spam email I get about sexual dysfunction and erections and so forth. Because it started to dawn on me that some of them are actually quite funny. So so I listed some, and I thought I'd read some here. 8 inches in your pants. Oh, and by the way, if you're around small kids, you know, you might want to fast forward this part. Activate huge dick sequence. Beef up your tube steak. They just make me laugh. Don't resist, just F the d-d-d as crazy. All right, I got some more. These are the best ones.
Can you imagine being the copywriter who has to come up with it?
I don't know. I know. Fuck a lot with our drugs. Get help for your small size. Well, that's just demeaning. Get more out of your Johnson. I love it. Juice up your Johnson. Large and in charge. Looking for something to give the little woman. Now, that sounds innocent enough. It sounds like, oh, that could be a nice little gift site. Yes, it's Valentine's Day. I want to get the little woman something.
Apparently you do.
Yeah. Make your dick an anaconda. Wow.
I'm not sure she'd like to see that.
I don't think so.
Women don't like snakes, okay?
No. No more needle dick. No more pencil dick. Again, that's just insulting. Packing or lacking. Pencil dick. This is funny. Penetrate your partner for hours on end. I don't know.
Again, I don't think women like that.
That doesn't sound good. Problems with erection. This is past. This is the future. I think that was written by some foreign land or something. This is weird. She wants to get fucked. I'll bet she does. Small and shriveled? ? Again, that's just insulting. Supersize your manhood. Swing your huge dick around. I want to take those drugs because I just want to swing it around. And then finally, want to be the cock of the walk. That's just weird.
Now, should we ask why you're getting all these?
Well,
what did you subscribe to that got you on these lists?
Oh, I'll bet you get
No, I don't get any of them.
No, I've just been, because I came across one that made me laugh, and I thought, I wonder how many others are funny. And so I check my spam folder, because I go to my spam.
Oh, all right.
But, oh, yeah, I get all kinds of them. I guess I'm on the small dick list. Even though that's not true. Okay, maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, did you hear about?
I just want to be the cock of the walk.
Well, okay, cock of the walk. Did you hear what happened last month in New York? Speaking of men with small penises, but a lot of money. Okay, this was the matchmaking service that got together men who were rich and women who were hot.
Oh, okay. A natural pairing.
It made the news because it was so controversial to think that you are only going to bring together men and women based on these qualifications.
That's been happening for
centuries. It's been happening for a long time, but to actually come out there and say, okay, guys, in order to qualify to come to our little party, you have to, if you're over 30, have $500,000 of income, assets of $1 million, trust of $4 million. You have to provide documented proof, and you pay $500 for your ticket to the event. Women, you, on the other hand, have to submit 5 pictures And you will be based solely on beauty.
Beauty. So why is it so controversial? Why can't we in this country, in this world, just be honest? It sounds like a great service. Because rich people want to hook up and find their young, little, beautiful trophies. Trophies want to find the older, mature guy with money. And this just helps them. It's a win-win.
Well, this is from the website. Pocket Change is honoring the age-old union of wealthy men and hot girls. Society has taught us not to publicly acknowledge the obvious, which is what you're talking about.
I think that's ridiculous.
No longer, dear friends. All right. Women don't ask what does he do for a living because they're interested in his personality, and guys don't ask is she hot because they're concerned with character. Guys know, this is, again, a direct quote from the website, guys know that money buys them the car, the house, and the trophy wife. This
right.
genetic cleansing is how the wealthy stay beautiful.
Right. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. It helps motivate people to give to society and make society stronger by being an economic asset. Hey, it's the truth. Why not acknowledge it? It's great.
It's appalling, Jeff.
Why is it appalling?
Oh, it's just appalling on so many levels that women are still just objects and they're still based solely on their looks. And it's assuming that women only want men for one thing, and that's money.
A lot of women do, though.
A lot of women do, but
for
not all of them.
You would deny them a service like this, though?
They had 900 women apply for this, and 40 of them were chosen to come to this little event.
Yeah.
It's just sad that that's a comment on our society, that that's what we care about.
Well, I don't disagree with you that women should aspire for more, but I think that's something that...
And men don't care what a woman's personality is as long as she's hot. And that will make a lasting relationship. Oh, we know that that is not true. Come on.
The question is, it is interesting reason, because I wouldn't think that would create a lasting relationship. But
no, but that's
I wonder how those relationships do work out. I mean, they do, what happens?
Yeah, I would like to follow up and see if how many hookups did they get and how long are these people going to really date?
But not even just from this website, just in general, the old guy, rich guy with the young wife. I wonder how those marriages...
How they
do.
Last. Yeah.
I wonder if the divorce rate is
higher,
greater or less than the, you know, typical mm-hmm. divorce rate.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting. We'll have to
look into that.
We'll have
that
to research that.
That is an interesting topic. And here in Dallas, I mean, come on, it is somewhat prevalent, but I just, this got a lot of news coverage because it was so incredibly blatant.
Well,
and it was in New York, and some people wanted to be interviewed and some people did not, but they definitely, all the news agencies covered this event, and I just...
So there were 40 women selected for it. How many men?
40.
Okay, 40 and 40. Oh, same number that did the little study
cited
before.
Those
are the ones.
But again,
a lot of lying about their height on those.
Men pay $500 and the women pay nothing. They just get it
right.
because they're
attractive. They're beautiful. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. So how was the event? I didn't see you there.
They're going to have another one for sugar mamas, and the woman has to make $4 million
cool.
be able to prove $4 million, and the guys have to be hot.
Oh,
there you go. So I guess I'm a little happier about that because it's not complete.
Yeah, that's true. It's reversal, same thing. Yeah,
same thing. You know, it's like, why don't Hooters have hot guys wearing really short
sure.
shorts,
sure.
packing their big wad after they've used all those remedies that you
but
get?
Would that really, all these great drugs
that's right.
to juice up your Johnson? It's called a sock. Get used to it. No, but why isn't there a men Hooters?
I know that's my
because I don't think it would draw women in, would it? Would you go? Because
of course you'd go. Why do men go? You don't think women are just as visual as men? I mean, Chippendales used to be a big deal in certain cities.
It yeah,
was, you know the Chippendales calendar, the hunky men. There's definitely shows for. I mean, I don't know. I think women would. I just don't like that they
market potential. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that
That's
could be
my only
that
problem
could be our
with
business.
Hooters, you know?
What would you call it? We wouldn't call it Hooters. You'd call it Anaconda.
Does
let's go to Anacondas.
And they wear little shorts with the word right across their ass, right?
The specialty of the house is sausage. Sausage with
beef
eggs.
Cake.
Yeah, beefcake. Yeah.
The look of love is in. A look smile can't disguise. Of love, it's saying so much more than just words could ever say. And what my heart has heard.
Let's go back to non-sexual stuff. I have, this is interesting. I think you talked about some of this before, but they have done studies on greenhouse gas emissions and found that if going vegetarian may be the quickest, most effective way to reduce global warming. Now, this is over about buying a hybrid or anything like that, because livestock are not only huge producers of methane gas, which is kind of funny, you know, by its own right, because they fart a lot.
But they eat a lot, too.
Yes. But that's exactly it. They affect deforestation, and a huge amount of energy is required to bring them to your table. Globally, the livestock industry is responsible for 18% of greenhouse gas emissions. And I think you talked about a little bit about that before, but I just thought that was remarkable.
That is one of the advantages of being a vegetarian. And anybody who's read about it, they do talk about that you are actually helping the earth in a lot of different ways, because the amount of food it takes to feed. I think it was on the fact that we're down to our critical level of food supplies in the world. And now with a lot of corn going to ethanol, and the corn that's needed to feed these animals, that it's a kind of a mess. And speaking of, my one and only really sad story that I wanted to mention, that got absolutely no play at all in the media because of Anna Nicole Smith's death and the last 3 weeks of nothing, nonstop Anna Nicole, and on every single channel. But
yeah, finally the news organizations around the world did a good job. I felt like I had adequate coverage
of Anna Nicole Smith.
Because a lot of these things go by and I just want more.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Like this little story that just kind of went by, and it's just unbelievable. The very first paragraph, it came out of the United Nations. 18,000 children die every day because of hunger and malnutrition, and 850 million people go to bed every night with empty stomachs. And it's a terrible indictment of the world. In 2007, said the head of the UN Food Agency, who is stepping down after 5 years.
Wow.
And that came and went in a blip on the radar screen. And that, you know, when you look at the news every night, or even the national news, and you see what, football players were killed when a bus overturned, and
right.
the people at the high school that didn't get out of the way of the tornado, even though they were warned 3 hours earlier. You know, you hear, okay, 14 people have died, and yet we've got 18,000 little children dying every single day, and we do nothing about it. But we are thinking about saving the asteroid for $300 million, but we're not really thinking about feeding the kids.
I saw an interview with one of those kids that was laying dying, and he was going to die, and he said, "What's your last words, little Jimmy?" And little Jimmy goes, "Where is Anna Nicole Smith going to be buried?"
Oh, stop it, Jeff. It is tasteless.
It's tasteful.
It is tasteless. But there's so many advantages to feeding the population, and to what we were just talking about. Part of the reason there's no food is because so many developing countries just eat so much meat.
Right.
But one-fifth of the world's population used to be hungry, and now it's actually decreased to one-sixth of the world's population. So that's actually a good thing. But the number of hungry people are growing by 5 million people a year because of the rising population. Most of malnourished children are in India. They have 100 million in India and 40 million in China. And, of course, Africa and Darfur are you know, we can't even...
Yeah.
Think of a solution to that. But
right.
It's very sad that a story as important as this gets no coverage. But yet we'll talk incessantly about the bus that went over, you know.
Yeah. Let's talk people. About that bus and Anna Nicole Smith a little bit more. This story is really boring. I'm kind of zoning out, I find.
Yeah, please. What else do we need to know about Anna Nicole?
Can we go back to Anna Nicole Smith, please?
No, why don't we go to Al Sharpton?
Oh, yeah.
Al Sharpton.
I am absolutely aghast.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I have no, I lost all my respect for, what's the
Strom
guy's name?
Thurman.
Strom Thurmond, yeah.
Strom Thurmond's
How dare he
relatives
own...
once owned Reverend Al Sharpton's great-grandfather.
Yeah.
So here we have one of the most famous segregationists in the United States ever. Who
right.
actually fathered, who had a relationship with a black slave and fathered a black granddaughter. And,
right.
And he also owned one of this country's prominent civil rights activists. He owned the family. And it's just unbelievable.
It's pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. The irony of it all. Yeah.
And what was it? They had, when Cheney went to Afghanistan, he was riding the plane, was the Spirit of Strom Thurmond.
The Spirit of Strom Thurmond. Oh, my goodness.
That was a guffaw.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, I have a little health tip.
Another one.
And I haven't tried this personally, but I bought the product, so we'll see how it works out. I'll update you with the next podcast. But have you ever heard of this nose saline rinse? It's not a little thing that you inject in your nose. It's just a saline rinse. Singers, I didn't know this, singers use this every day.
Really?
It's basically, it wards off germs that accumulate in your nose. And it basically maximizes your chances of not getting sick.
Wow.
And they say once you do this rinse, it's kind of weird at first, but once you get used to it, you do it daily. It feels great because your sinus passages are just completely
happy.
Happy. and they're open and you're breathing free. And it's so simple. So I bought some at the drugstore. I haven't tried it yet, but, it's not very expensive. And, it's more effective, from what this article that I saw say, than just about any other form of cold prevention.
Wow, that is amazing.
So that's a little tip. No one's ever told me that before, and I've never seen the product, but you can buy them. But you got to make sure that you don't get the little, what do they call it, the thing that you just sort of jam into your nose, like a mister. This is a rinse. They'll be labeled as like a saline rinse. So look for that at a Walmart near you.
Hey, so how about the Delta Zetas that got kicked out of their sorority at DePauw University?
I didn't see that. What did they do?
Because they weren't pretty enough. 23 of them were asked to leave.
No, okay, yeah, I think I did hear something about it, but I didn't follow it up. I mean, you know, sororities and fraternities have Rush, and basically one of the criterions, you know, is kind of social and beauty and stuff, especially the more snooty sororities.
Right.
But these girls were actually
were actual members of this. They lived
in
the house.
So why would they be kicked out?
They were forced to move out of the chapter house at the end of January. They were notified in December. What I wanted to talk about here, because this made the news, it was all over. Everybody was talking about, three of the girls went on TV. They were
they pretty ugly?
No, actually they weren't, but they were different ethnicities. One was Asian.
Really?
Mm-hmm. One of them said that they were told by Delta Zeta's national leaders, you need to be more sexually appealing. You need to make the guys want you.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I can't believe that
that's from the
happened.
National?
I can't believe that they said that.
No, that's unbelievable.
But here's what the national organization did say. This is the actual statement that they issued, that in August, they said Delta Zeta members at DePauw voted to close the chapter. DePauw University denied the closure. Based upon recommendations from the university, DZ met with women of the Delta chapter at DePauw to ask who would commit to rebuilding the 98-year-old chapter. The only factor in determining who would remain an active collegiate member or become an alumna was the commitment to recruit for the chapter.
Hmm.
But it's gotten twisted to be that 23 women were asked to leave because they were not up to the standards.
Huh.
Now, I find that really interesting that those are two totally conflicting stories.
Right, right.
And it's just become such a nightmare for this. I mean, the school's involved. There's an uproar in all sororities and fraternities about, oh, my goodness, you know, how can you do this? And what is really the truth? How will we ever know?
I think it was really interesting
because these girls would have been, these 23 members would have been part of this meeting where they said, who wants to continue to rebuild the chapter? Because it is a lot of work. I mean, if you really are down to very few members and you have goals you have to reach, man, you just rush all the time. Right,
right. Right.
And it is a big deal. And maybe they didn't commit. Maybe they didn't sign the form letter. Who knows? But the fact that they go on the air and then say, so now the sorority is down to 6 members. 23 were asked to leave, 6 left with them in protest, and there's 6 members left. Hmm. And if they close the chapter, they won't be able to reopen it there. So it's just amazing that
if they close, why can't they reopen it?
Because I think there's other ones that want to get on.
Oh.
There's other, you know, sororities waiting to get on.
There's a waiting list.
Yep. So anyhow, I just think that that's... just the interesting take on the news story there.
What
the official organization is saying is completely contradicting what the girls are saying.
Right.
So somebody didn't exactly communicate, did they?
Right. I wonder who's right and who's wrong. Will there be any chance of a follow-up, you think? Or you think we'll just go, this is done?
That was their 15 minutes and they're gone.
Yeah, they're gone.
They're gone.
Wow. The Delta Zetas in our college campus were kind of the dogs.
Thanks for sharing, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't want to date a Delta Zeta. Dizzy. But I'm sure they're beautiful at most campuses, just in case we have any DZ listeners. I'm sure they're the icons of beauty. So I wanted to talk about a little bit about personal debt, actually public debt. This is the amount of debt that people owe, personal debt. The number one country for personal debt is the United States. National debt in the USA is $9 trillion. And actually, we lead, as you'll see, by quite a bit. Last year, the average American spent more than he earned. We talked about that before.
-1% savings.
Yeah. Again, representing the lowest personal savings rate since the Great Depression. The average U.S. consumer has about $7,850 in personal debt. The second biggest country is Japan. This kind of surprised me because Japan,
yes.
I said the U.S. is $9 trillion. Japan is $8
trillion. Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Japan being known as a nation of savers.
Known as a nation of savers, and not really known as a nation of a lot of credit card usage. Obviously, that's changing over time. Yeah. So, and then falling in number three, is Germany and the UK, and they come down to $1.94 trillion. So you can see there's this huge gap between these other guys. So Germany, UK, five is France, six is Australia. You know, most of the
developed
economic
countries.
Seven. Mm-hmm. Seven is Canada, eight is China, nine is India, and 10 is Italy. Italy kind of surprised me. Italy always surprised me when they're on the top of anything because they're just a small little country, you know, of good people.
That's right. Great food. Would you want to be surprised by what Peru did this week?
I do. What did Peru do?
Did you hear what Peru did?
Those Peruvians are always up to something.
Yeah, they were. This week, they held a nationally televised ceremony on March 1st to help citizens get more responsible for being on time.
Really?
Peruvians are typically an hour.
Oh, yeah. It's all part of that South American culture.
It's all part of mañana, meaning tomorrow, an age-old euphemism for lateness and procrastination that are common in Latin America. Funerals, weddings, meals, and business meetings rarely start on time, and it's considered rude to even be punctual for a party. Peru's government said it's time for an attitude change, so this week they got together, and the sirens rang out, and church bells rang out, and 27 million Peruvians were asked to synchronize their watches.
Wow.
Is that amazing? They're hoping that latecomers will be shamed into mending their ways.
But I don't think that their watches are wrong.
Well,
that's making them late.
Maybe it was an excuse.
Yeah.
But they did a poll, and everybody's thinking it's not them who's the problem. They always think it's the other guy who's late.
I'm always on time.
So they actually said they surveyed an upscale lunchtime restaurant in Lima's financial district. Customers make reservations, but they rarely show up. And the worst offender was the former president, Alejandro Toledo, who showed up so late to events, sometimes by 2 hours, that Peruvians coined the phrase Cabana time, referring to the mountain village where he was born.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes.
So that's leadership setting the wrong example.
Yes, exactly.
Can a government really instill that kind of cultural behavior on their people?
Well, they do lose a lot of man hours. I mean, that is really to make other people wait.
Right.
You know, that is.
But how much of that is so ingrained in a culture? What can a government really do?
Well, they're trying to combat the lateness. The big old attitude adjustment.
Wow.
They don't have any debt, though.
Yeah, no, they didn't show up in the top 10. There's no debt when you're not there to invest in anything, spend anything. You're never there on time. I was going to go shopping, but I was late. I was talking to, you know, Carlita and having some flan. All right. Well, this is pretty exciting. And it's very exciting, given that two-thirds of Americans are obese or overweight.
We've talked about that.
We've talked about this. But the first over-the-counter weight loss pill won approval from U.S. health officials. This was like at the beginning of February. GlaxoSmithKline makes a pill called Ally, and it's spelled A-L-L-I. It reduces the amount of fat the body absorbs from food. So the drug is a half-dose version of a prescription medicine called Xenical. Now, I never understood this. When like a prescription medicine is different than the over-the-counter because it just has more. Well, you can just take three of the over-counters to be one of the prescription medications. That seems really silly. So, but anyways, this is like one half of Xenical. So they the drug's packaging say that for every 5 pounds that you lose through a diet, Ally can help the person drop 2 or 3 pounds more. So anyways.
So it's for severely obese people and you
need
a prescription.
Yeah. One of the doctors, an FDA doctor, said the drug is only going to be effective if used in conjunction with a weight loss program. Well, it's kind of like, duh. Yeah. It works by reducing the amount of the fat that the body absorbs by about 25%. The undigested fat is eliminated through bowel movements, which can cause side effects such as gas and oily discharge. So what they said is if you eat a oily discharge, that's gross.
What? Thanks for sharing. Could you edit that part of the story out?
No, it's important. If people are going to rush. People from this show are going to rush out and get Ally, and they need to know they're going to have gas and oily discharge. Don't they? I mean, we're responsible.
You're all about health this week.
Medical practitioners. Yeah. So eating a low-fat diet can reduce these side effects. So there you go. You need to get on that, if just for the joy of having oily discharge.
Thanks, and no, I don't need to get on it. Well, if you say I need to be on it, then I'll tell you need to go work on the Johnson. So you've heard of the Newbery medal, right?
I've heard of it. I can't remember what it's for.
You would have heard of it because when you were a kid, the most prestigious award in children's literature was the Newbery Medal. Remember the little silver sticker on the books?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Well, very controversial this year. The winner of the Newbery Medal is a book called The Higher Power of Lucky by Susan Patron. The book's heroine is a scrappy 10-year-old little orphan named Lucky Trimble. And she heard through a hole in the wall another character say that he saw a rattlesnake bite his dog Roy on the scrotum. And that word scrotum has caused a huge stir in the world of librarians and the world of censorship, actually. And what do middle school children read? And is it okay for librarians to not carry this book that won the most prestigious award given in the category because of the word scrotum?
Huh.
What do you think? Isn't that amazing that many school librarians were so shocked by it that they've pledged to ban the book, and it's reopened the debate about what is acceptable content in children's literature?
I think they should interview kids. Find out if they're really bugged by that at all. I think adults sometimes make more of this stuff than it's really necessary.
I was more bothered by oily discharge, actually. But
I could tell.
The book has been
banned. Do you have something to confess?
No. The book has been banned from school libraries in a handful of states in the South, the West and the Northeast. Librarians in other schools have indicated on an online debate that they may follow suit. And you know, the chairman of the Newbery Award Committee said that declining to stock this book is nothing short of censorship. The people who are reacting to that word are not reading the book as a whole. That's what censors do. They pick out words and don't look at the total merit of the book.
Right.
So it's actually, that is the equivalent of winning, of being selected as part of the Oprah's Book Club. It'll sell 10 times more copies because of the award.
Yeah.
And yet now it's being censored, and the author is just stunned. And she said it's actually based on a true incident involving a friend's dog, and she herself is a librarian. She's a librarian in a public school in Los Angeles, and she said it's written for 9 to 12-year-olds. So,
what would be interesting, like I said, to sort of see what the kids think about it, but also is to see what
it's parents who they're afraid of. They're afraid parents are going to protest.
Right. So I think that you're right. But what I would like to know is I'd like to know the view of professionals that deal with the psychology of children at that age and find out if there are any adverse effects. I mean, I don't know. If there are adverse effects of something like that, then, you know, maybe it shouldn't have been written that way as a kid's book. But my suspicion is there's really no adverse effects, and this is all a hullabaloo about nothing. But before I would say that, you know, I'd like to know what the professionals say. Librarians aren't, I don't trust what they say as far as this topic goes, you know?
Well, one librarian was quoted, "I don't want to start an issue about censorship, but you won't find men's genitalia in quality literature, at least not for children." Until now.
Until
when
now.
When scrotum has appeared in the book, The Higher Power of Lucky.
Well, there's a new little children's book that I thought was quite the challenge is that, called Little Billy Juices Up His Johnson. I'm having too much fun with those things. All right. Hey, we're just about out of time here, but I did want to congratulate the Reverend Ted Haggard for 3 weeks after he was gay. Now he's straight.
Is he straight now?
It took 3 weeks. He went through a very intense program. These programs can be very difficult, I hear. So now he's straight, and I think that's just wonderful. You
and
know?
I bet he's praying to God for helping him become straight.
I'm sure he praises God for the... Thanks God for...
Yeah, thanks God.
Yeah, whatever. Yes. So anyway, I think that's quite exciting, and I think we should put...
He's actually come out and said he's straight now?
Is his
wife going to take him back?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, straight. You know, he went to the shop and had a little checkup and...
He got that gene taken out.
Yeah.
That was causing him to run the opposite to run the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Things are good for old Ted, huh? He'll get his church back.
He just might, you know.
Now he
has a story of a journey that has all to do with faith in God, I'm sure.
I bet there's a book coming, right?
I bet there's a book.
I bet there's a talk show circuit.
How I found the straight approach to life after seeing this gay prostitute for four years or whatever.
No, he was only for massages now. He was very tense.
Yeah. Yes. Silly things that we hear in the news. Just silly. Well, that's
all
I've got.
This was a fine 50th show, don't you think?
We'll do the song and dance sometime soon, though.
We certainly got into the gutter a bit, but
yeah.
Sorry about the oily discharge, folks, and scrotum.
You keep bringing those things up. God, leave it. All right, so our phone number is 206-888-4851. Our website is www.thisandthatpodcast.com. You can reach Gretchen and I at jeff@thisandthatpodcast.com. Gretchen doesn't want an email address. I've offered her one, but she doesn't want one, so I forward everything to Gretchen. And that's about it. We wish you all nice oily discharges. And we'll see you for show 51 very soon.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.